Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from silicon to silicone. Today we're examining the chemistry of electronics. We'll explore the development of the earliest electronic transistors and hear listener feedback after our first month on the podosphere. That's all coming up on Distillations. We typically think of California's Silicon Valley as the heart of the digital age. It's the birthplace of Google and countless other internet giants, including some of the biggest high-tech semiconductor firms in the world. Journalist Don Heffler coined the term Silicon Valley in 1971, referring to the element that makes up the millions of microchips that flood out of the region every year. But it turns out the electronic revolution didn't begin with silicon. The first transistor, invented at Bell Telephone Laboratories in December 1947 to replace the vacuum tube, was made of germanium. As news of the new electronic device spread, several former vacuum tube manufacturers, including RCA, GE, Sylvania, and Raytheon, all on the Eastern Seaboard, began to look into the transistor. This was arguably the germanium valley of the 1950s. We'll tell you more about these early transistors in just a few moments, but first, let's linger a bit on germanium, the element of the week. The existence of germanium was predicted in 1871 by Dmitri Mendeleev, a Russian chemist and the author of the periodic table. Based on his theory of the periodicity of chemical elements, Mendeleev predicted that chemists would find a gray metal with a relative atomic weight of 72 and chemical properties similar to silicon, which he called ecosilicon. His prediction was confirmed 15 years later when the German chemist Clemens Winkler managed to isolate a metal with most of Mendeleev's predicted characteristics. Winkler named the new element after his native land, germanium. This was an important confirmation of Mendeleev's idea of elemental periodicity. For the next 50 years, germanium was known mainly for its uselessness. All this changed with the invention of the solid-state transistor in 1947. The inventors of the transistor, Walter Brattain, John Bardeen, and William Shockley, placed a wedge-shaped wax block covered with a foil of gold upon a piece of germanium crystal. This amplified electric current and power, something that was previously unrealizable without vacuum tubes. Their achievement earned the three men the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1956. The rapid growth of the semiconductors and transistor industry created a large market for germanium, which is now used in thousands of electronic applications. Although it started being replaced by silicon in the 1960s, the largest use for germanium is still in semiconductors. Both germanium and germanium oxide have interesting light transmission qualities that make it useful in fiber optics communication networks, infrared night vision systems, and wide-angle camera lenses. And that's it for the Element of the Week. Next up, we'll hear from a pioneer from the early days of transistor manufacturing. Dr. Henry Crissell began working on semiconductors at RCA in the 1950s. He now serves on the board of several microelectronics companies and is the author of Competing for the Future: How Digital Innovations Are Changing the World. CHF's Audra Wolf has this interview.
Hello, Dr. Crissell, and welcome to Distillations.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Now, the early transistors that you and your colleagues were working on were meant to replace vacuum tube amplifiers. Why were manufacturers looking for an alternative?
Basically, a vacuum tube device required an envelope and required a source of electrons and grids and a rather complex mechanical structure. The transistor was attractive because all of those functions that were done in a vacuum were now done in a tiny piece of semiconductor material. And therefore, it was possible to dramatically shrink the dimensions of the amplifying device. So it was what people realized very early. This was a very dramatic development that opened up brand new opportunities.
Many of the earliest solid-state transistors were actually made from germanium. What made germanium a good choice?
Well, germanium was a material that could be purified, and the technology for purifying it and also making single crystals had been developed earliest, and therefore when one had to make a device, you were working with a material that had been well studied and of which the technology was the most advanced of all of the semiconductor materials. So that's why germanium was first.
Now, the invention of the solid-state transistor was a groundbreaking and transformative event. But what would have happened if we had never switched to silicon? What if we had stayed with germanium the entire time?
Well, had we stayed with germanium, we would not have the world that we have today. Silicon has most remarkable properties. Perhaps the most important one is the ability to grow a silicon dioxide film, which is an insulator glass, and pattern that film. And that really is what made integrated circuits possible. And also the ability not only to make integrated circuits, but to make ever smaller transistors as the sophistication of the manufacturing process improves. And two, silicon is able to operate under more stressful temperatures, higher temperatures, which allows very compact systems to be built, which don't stop working when the devices get hot. So without silicon, I don't believe we'd have had the integrated circuits. We wouldn't have so-called Moore's Law, and we wouldn't have high-speed computers that sit on your fingernail.
So no silicon, no laptop, no cell phone, no Palm Pilot?
I don't think so.
So do you see silicon as being the material of semiconductors for the foreseeable future?
At the current pace of development, people keep saying that we have reached the limit with silicon, and people were already saying that perhaps 10 years ago, and we really have not seen those limits as yet. We keep to, technology keeps evolving, material science keeps evolving, and we seem to be packing more and more transistors on smaller and smaller areas, and those transistors are switching faster and faster. So what is known as Moore's Law has not as yet reached its limit. So I see, from the commercial point of view, mass production silicon is going to be around for a long time.
Well, great. I think that about wraps it up. Thanks again for coming on the show, Dr. Crissell.
My pleasure.
Dr. Henry Crissell joined us from his office in New York City. You can learn more about early transistor manufacturing by visiting our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Finally, today, we'll ask Audra to stick around for a few minutes to share some of the emails we've been getting here at Distillations after our first month on the air. Audra, what kind of feedback have you gotten so far?
Well, Robert, the response has really been quite positive. First, I want to thank all the listeners out there for tuning in and everyone who subscribed on iTunes and some of the other podcast directories. I especially want to thank the bloggers and the history of science community across the globe who've mentioned us. It's been really a great boost to us to know that people are listening to what we're doing. We also love comments. You can comment directly on the website if you'd like your comments to be public, or you can send us an email at distillations@chemheritage.org. Now, there were two shows in particular that elicited quite a bit of feedback. You may recall that phlogiston was the element of the week on the first show. Several listeners wrote in to say that we had left out one of the key players in this story, Joseph Priestley. And these listeners were right. Joseph Priestley was very much involved in the transition from phlogiston to oxygen. On our show, we credited Lavoisier with naming oxygen. Now, that's technically true, but it's also a little bit misleading. Priestley was the one who actually isolated oxygen, and he also isolated a number of other gases at about the same time. But the catch is that Priestley didn't think of what he isolated as oxygen. Instead, he thought it was dephlogisticated air. What Lavoisier did was he recognized that oxygen was something else altogether, a new kind of thing, and that was really why he's credited with the discovery of oxygen. You can read more about this at CHF's Chemical Achievers website. We've posted a link on our webpage. The cleaning up show also sparked a bit of controversy. A couple of listeners wanted to know why, if the Pacific Trash Vortex is the size of Texas, you can't see a picture of it. This is a good question, and we had spent quite a bit of time looking for satellite photos both before and after we aired the show. We still don't have a firm and final answer for you, but what we've heard is that the kinds of trash floating in the Pacific, generally plastics and other low-density wastes, may not be dense enough to show up in satellite photography. This seems reasonable to us, but if you found a picture or if you have a better explanation for why there isn't one, please do drop us a line and let us know what you found.
Thanks, Audra. And thanks again to our listeners. We look forward to reading your comments and letters on this and all the other shows. And that wraps up this week's episode of Distillations. Our quotation this week is from William Shockley, the co-recipient of the 1956 Nobel Prize in Physics. Transistor electronics exist because of the controlled presence of imperfections in otherwise perfect crystals. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indiviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.